Hello, and welcome to another episode of Physio Chats, a Singapore Physiotherapy Association podcast. Today, our host, Mr. Kieran Phillips, Senior Physiotherapist at Heartland Rehab Singapore, is joined by Ms. Ip Wan Hui, Senior Physiotherapist at the Singapore General Hospital, and Ms. Prit Singh, Director and Physiotherapist at Embrace Physiotherapy Singapore. They discuss the topic of physiotherapy in women's health.
Hi, hello everybody, and welcome to Physio Chats Episode 2. My name's Kieran. I work with the Musculoskeletal Special Interest Group, and I'm very happy to be joined today by two very qualified, very experienced women's health therapists. We have with us today Wan Hui from SGH and Preet from Embrace Physiotherapy. And they're going to be telling us about women's health therapy, why it's relevant to non-women's health therapists, and what we should be looking out for in our general population. So if we can just get them to introduce ourselves first. So let's start with you, Wan Hui.
Hello. So my name is Wan Hui, obviously. I work at SGH. I graduated back in 2010, and I've been working at SGH since. I developed an interest in women's health, I think, back in my poly days. I was fortunate enough to then do my undergraduate program at Curtin, where they did have, I think, quite a comprehensive coverage on women's health. I think they called it gender health then. So after that, when I returned to SGH, I started in the women's health and pediatrics team in 2012. So then I had a nice exposure to the neonates department, as well as then coming back to the ONG department, where I have kind of pretty much been covering till today. So I completed my master's in pelvic health and continence in 2019. So I'm currently running a pelvic health clinic. So a big proportion of the clients I see are women, but I do actually treat men as well. So not just women's health, but pelvic health in general. Yeah, so that's who I am.
Lovely. Thanks for the info. Preet, can you tell us a bit about yourself?
Certainly. So, hi, my name's Preet. I've been a physio since 2007. I graduated from the University of Sydney. I worked in Sydney and Melbourne in tertiary institutions, where I actually predominantly covered cardiorespiratory wards. Moved to Singapore in 2011, where I started working at SGH, and that's where I met Wan Hui. And after that, went on mat leave, and by default recognised that I needed the assistance of a women's health physio in my postnatal recovery, and through personal experience, that's how I learnt more about women's health or pelvic floor physiotherapy, and that naturally led me to go down a bit of a rabbit warren and learn more about pelvic health and how we can help women across the lifespan. So I completed my grad cert in women's health and continence in 2020. It took me 2 years to complete part-time. And consequently, during that time, I decided to venture out on my own and start my own private practice called Embrace Physiotherapy, where I predominantly treat women. Well, actually, I only treat women. So yeah, that's a bit about me.
So there's a bit of a difference, you'd say, in both your practice, whereas Wan Hui is doing more sort of generalized pelvic health, because she's also seeing men, whereas you only see women, right?
Yeah, I've decided to practice in my area of strengths and interest. Undertaking postgraduate studies actually exposes you to not only women's health, but also pelvic health in general. So addressing men's needs through the lifespan, as well as pediatrics. And definitely in Singapore, we have come to realise that there's not enough exposure or coverage in all three areas that pelvic health, well, that physiotherapy could address, unfortunately. And I think COVID hasn't made that any easier either, with an inability to be able to leave Singapore to actually embark on tertiary studies to further develop as clinicians.
And I think it was really great as well that you mentioned that after you had one of your children, that kind of inspired you to get into women's health therapy. What was the sort of trigger for you, Wan Hui? What was your inspiration to move into this field?
I think strangely enough, I developed an interest in when I was very young. I think when I was 18, I don't know. I liked all things applicable, being a woman, you know. I thought like, I should learn about this since, you know, the 1 in 3 women are going to develop incontinence in their lifetime. Might as well be the one treating myself. So yeah, it just happened that the undergraduate program at Curtin just gave me enough exposure to go like, I think this is really something that I like. And just well enough in SGH that we have this speciality area where I could, you know, learn from seniors as well. So I think that was, in the end, I was like, yes, I think I found my calling.
So it was really that undergraduate exposure that first sort of tickled your interest, was it?
Yeah.
And where did you do your undergraduate pre? Was you at Curtin as well? Or?
No, I actually am a exercise sports science graduate. So that was my undergraduate degree. And I actually pursued a master's in physiotherapy. And we covered or had no exposure to women's health. So we didn't even know it existed as a form. Well, as a branch of physiotherapy, having done a master's. So it's really interesting how different training gives you different exposure. And I think over the years, as we've had more mentors within the field, more research to support what we do as therapists, it's becoming more and more prevalent that there is a big need to service not only women, but men and pediatrics as well.
Yeah, that's very interesting because, I mean, I trained in the UK and I didn't do any, there was no exposure to women's health. As far as I'm aware, definitely not for me, but even for, I think, the women in my cohort as well, I don't think there was any exposure on undergraduate training, which is interesting. I think the guys at Curtin are doing a good job then. That's nice. So what's a typical clinical day like then for a women's health therapist? What are the main conditions that you see? What are the common things that affect women that would require you to see a women's health therapist?
So by way of example, at my clinic, where I only treat women, typically it's postnatal women who present with abdominal separation, so diastasis recti abdominis or DRAM. And then also these particular women will also seek advice on their pelvic floor health pertaining to return to exercise and movement in the postnatal period. So typically that's what brings a lot of patients to my clinic, seeking that advice and guidance on how to return or recover postnatally. Some of these women will also seek further advice on things like blocked ducts and mastitis, using non-invasive techniques to help address those lactational issues. We also see a lot of women who present with the typical pelvic girdle pain, lower back pain, thoracic pain, rib pain, for example. Women who present with changes to their bladder and bowel function, so things like constipation, urinary incontinence, urgency. Beyond just being pregnant or postnatal, we see women who are perhaps even younger or older who present with similar issues. With regards to changes to their bladder and bowel dysfunction. So I see a lot of urinary incontinence, women who present with something called bladder pain syndrome, more so towards pelvic pain or persistent pelvic pain, what we probably more familiar with as being called vaginismus and or dyspareunia, which is painful intercourse, and vaginismus is the difficulties with penetration, whether that's a penis, pap smear, or a tampon. And then we do see girls who present with endometriosis, the ones that have been fortunate enough to be diagnosed and have been educated on, you know, the benefits of pelvic floor physiotherapy helping them in their management of their, you know, their monthly concerns. And then we do see women here pre and post-op, particularly gynae surgery. So, you know, hysterectomies, for example, whether that's for cancerous or non-cancerous reasons, pre and post urological surgeries. I'm sure one way can elaborate more on the relevance of pelvic floor physiotherapy turning to men, particularly pre and post prostatectomy, for example. And then we see a host of other issues that we can help manage with regards to prolapse and, you know, hemorrhoids and things along those lines. But I'm sure one way can elaborate a bit further there.
That's quite a list.
Yeah.
I mean, I certainly wasn't aware that there was so much, to be honest.
But
as an MSK practitioner, there's typically a big difference between what we would see within general MSK in private practice to what the public system would see within MSK therapy. Is that the same within women's health, Wanhui?
Yes. So generally, my population, the postpartum population that comes to me, unfortunately, are ladies who experience more severe continence issues. It is not something that is typically screened at the postnatal follow-up. I think the awareness in the local population is not really there. It's unfortunate, but we did a little study in the patient population in SGH. I think 60% of the respondents thought that it was normal to leak once they have had a baby. They have been told by their doctors that it will go away. I did a one-year follow-up study with our population, and 30% of them are still leaking 1 year after the delivery. So I do get them pretty late. I would say maybe 6 months to a year after delivery, and they would have been suffering fairly severe forms of incontinence. I do actually run a joint clinic with a urogynecologist. So we actually identify ladies that are at higher risk of developing incontinence. So if they have delivered with instrumentation or they've had severe perineal tears, then we actually identify them for follow-up. So that could be why we see people with more severe incontinence. I see less of ladies with the diastasis. I think usually it's not quite something that is brought up in the public system. I work through, I think I have more ladies from the perimenopausal age group. So a lot of the ladies would have urinary incontinence. Quite a big group of them present as urge urinary incontinence, but actually they have another condition, like they are retaining urine in the bladder. So I will then pick these people up, and I pick up a lot of urinary tract infections, interestingly, and a lot of these patients improve a lot after proper medical treatment, and then we'll work on whatever pelvic floor muscle dysfunction could be contributing to the issues. Yeah. And with the men here, we are seeing them post-prostatectomy as well as those probably 2 to 3 years later when they're doing a salvage, after they have done their salvage radiation therapy. So then they would present with more like a urgency type symptom where they would go to the toilet with really low volumes. Radiation unfortunately also causes changes in bowel patterns. So I do see both men and women with bowel urgencies, suboptimal stool type, so they have like really loose stools that require some kind of like dietary advice. I work closely with a dietitian, so then I do refer them over. So I think it's a big variety we see. Not many people understand that. I think sometimes people think that a pelvic health clinic is just about pelvic floor muscle exercise. Half the time it's not pelvic floor muscle exercise that I'm doing. It's a lot of other lifestyle. I'm sure Pete will know, I think we do a lot of it's not psychotherapy, but somewhere there. We manage anxiety and stress, right? Yeah, a lot of the symptoms. I'm sure with chronic pain in the MSK group is similar. So anyone who is anxious, especially like with people who have sensitive guts, will manifest then with bladder and bowel problems, and we do try to manage that. Yes, pain with intercourse is definitely something we see after deliveries. It's more common than people think, and it's really unfortunate. A lot of ladies think that the sex is supposed to be painful. Yes, so it's interesting the things that we see. Yeah,
I mean, this is all very eye-opening for me, you know, again being sort of a I almost feel like a MSK Neanderthal here a little bit, hearing this kind of stuff. But I mean, one thing that you mentioned that really, really caught my eye is there's a lot of bladder and bowel dysfunction that you seem to be dealing with. And in the MSK sort of, you know, meat and potatoes MSK field that I deal with, that's kind of a nightmare scenario. When somebody comes in and there's bladder and bowel function, then we start to panic, right? That's a red flag for us. How do you deal with that on an everyday when you're seeing people specifically for that? How would you differentiate somebody if they've got pelvic girdle pain, you know, and they've got bladder and bowel dysfunction? How do you screen for red flags?
Well, we go through a process similar as any MSK physio would do when screening for red flags. We use the same criterion as you guys, so it's no different. I suppose, you know, obviously the big one is the quarter equina stuff, right? So, you know, that loss of sensation and whatnot is a big flag to go see you later, go see someone at the hospital rather than have intervention with me. So I think, you know, as clinicians, we're fairly skilled at determining, you know, what's an emergency referral off to ED versus something that we can manage in clinic, just going through the same process as any MSK physio would. To differentiate between the two?
I think it comes down to the clinical presentation, because for MSK physio, it might be scary because it's incontinence. Oh my God, like it's incontinence. But there are actually many different types of incontinence. And if you're looking for the red flags, actually that is more pertaining towards urge urinary incontinence or something like a neurogenic bladder type symptom. So
bladder onset.
Yeah. And then you would have that. It's the same thing. So you would then ask for onset if there was any trauma, you know, kind of like around the onset of symptoms. Was there like on the land, on the buttock or the back? And then we would screen for other neurological issues, medical issues that could lead to perhaps, you know, other red flags that needed treatment. And the things that we often screen for, I think my lecturer would be proud of us. What does Irina say? Whenever someone presents with urge urinary incontinence, rule out urinary tract infection, rule out PVRU, yeah, which is a urinary retention. So really, I think if the patient presents with incontinence, it's about matching it with the story. If it's a sudden onset surrounding trauma, and it's kind of like a leak with preceded by urge, then I think that yes, is a red flag. But then if it sounds more like there was so the leak has been ongoing for many years, you know, you had a fall but then it didn't result in any change, the leak is more caused by, you know, coughs and sneezes, which is more what we call stress urinary incontinence, then perhaps that is something that can be treated by a pelvic health, women health therapist. But of course, it can be very scary for someone working in MSK to try to screen it out. But if you follow the usual screening, you know, your sensation, your power, and your paresthesia around the saddle area, I don't mm-hmm. think you can go wrong. It would be nice if, you know, you had a pelvic health, women's health therapist that you could actually reach out to and go like, hey, you know, I have this patient. Does it sound like something that would benefit from a referral to A&E or another physio? Then I think both Pri and I would be pretty happy to kind of be contactable to kind of like be a sounding board.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if there's any level of doubt, refer back to the GP and put some urgency behind it so the GP can make the call as well to support your clinical findings on whether this needs to be escalated to an A&E visit.
Mm. Yeah, cheers guys. I think that's going to be really helpful for people watching. You mentioned as well one way then, you said women's health, pelvic health, and given that, you know, you're seeing men in the public side, is it maybe time to get rid of the whole women's health thing and then just switch it to pelvic health?
Preet's doing some thinking. I think even in Australia, I think people are kind of like women's health, men's health. I personally do think it's quite difficult to be a pelvic health therapist
good at all around.
It's difficult. I feel like sometimes I don't do the men justice. But I am offering something. My mantra, okay, a bit Singlish here, okay, but something is better than nothing. I am learning more. and it's nice because we have a good kind of like support community online with this global pelvic health. Our classmates from the masters and that graduate cert program are very helpful. We do keep close contact with our lecturers, so then when we need kind of like advice, that's where we go to. But I don't think it's something that we can kind of like forcibly merge, because it's so varied. Like, men and women are wired totally different, not just in thinking, but like the anatomy is different. So the way you would assess the pelvic floor is different. And the problems they face are different as well. So men usually have an outflow issue because of how long the urinary tract is, where women usually have a control issue due to, you know, our muscles having this humongous hole so that we can have babies, and then the urinary tract is really only that short. So no, I think it really should be up to the individual therapist's comfort, interest, because the skills required are very different. Yeah. Would you agree, Preet?
Yeah. Hence why I've kind of stuck to my guns and have decided, no, I'm just going to try and be the best women's health or pelvic floor physio I can be, because I wouldn't want to be doing a disservice to the men. And I often get asked, oh, why don't you treat men? I'm just not good at it, and I don't want to subject people to, you know, my, you know, clinical incompetence, for a better way of putting it. So unfortunately it does mean that men lose out, but we do have a physio that's got a lot of experience in the men's health space in Singapore that men can pursue therapy from. But also I think one of the other highlights of COVID has been is that a lot of physios now offered online. So if you can Google an expert men's health or pelvic health physio, you could probably get a good online consult where they can do a great history and do good screening and understand, you know, your drivers and what you are presenting with, and then can present to you a management plan, whether that involves, you know, follow up with a medical team, for example, where you may require medication or further investigation, or that therapist may put you in touch with someone that may be closer to you to seek hands-on management or manual therapy if required. At the end of the day, and I think one way would agree with me, most of the work we do is multidisciplinary. So we work as a team. And so it's not just physio, it's physio, dietitian, medical. So we all work together to produce the outcomes that patients need.
Cool, good stuff. Sort of getting back to the women.
Yep.
What do you kind of do with these? What do you do with these patients? Like, what does the management look like? Because again, you know, using my reference frame of MSK, all sort of MSK therapy can kind of be broken down into: we let an injury settle or a condition settle, we recondition it, we maybe add in some manual therapy, some adjunct therapies, and then we gradually re-expose to whatever stimuli is causing the problem. And that's basically MSK therapy in a nutshell, right? Is there a similar sort of mantra for women's health? Because from the outside, it seems very opaque, it seems very mysterious.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the first time I reached out to a more experienced clinician asking for advice on how I may embark on my women's health training, she's like, so, you'd have to be comfortable doing vaginal exams. I was like, what? I was mortified. I was sitting in a cafe and I'm like, did anyone hear me or hear her say that? I was like, sorry, what do you mean? Like, you know, the gold standard of assessment for women's health in particular is doing internal vaginal exams. And then you kind of go, awkward silence, process. Would I be comfortable in offering that? And then you're like, okay, maybe, maybe not. And so you're like, okay, keep probing, keep gathering information. Internal vaginal exams, the only way we can assess patients. And the answer is no, it is the gold standard. It's going to give us the most precise information we need. But not every patient's going to be willing and open enough to go, yeah, hey, you can do that. So we need to find other means to assess patients. So what are these other means? We can use real-time ultrasound, for example. So, you know, whether that's transvaginal or transabdominal, we can get a 2D image of what's happening with your bladder and pelvic floor, for example. By no way is it precise, but it is some information for a patient that's not necessarily comfortable with more invasive means of assessment. The next step towards an internal exam would be an external pelvic floor exam, and that could be as much as, you know, placing the hands over the perineum or the back passage and with a patient's clothes on and just feeling for activation and relaxation of the pelvic floor as a very basic way of understanding whether they can connect or not connect with their pelvic floor. And then, you know, as the patient's comfort progresses, you know, you can take one layer away at a time. So these are some invasive versus non-invasive ways to help assess patients. But back to your original question on like, how do we treat patients? I think the biggest tool we have as clinicians is education and advice. At no point, if I reflect on my journey as a pregnant first time mum, was I ever educated on incontinence, prolapse, possible changes that I may undergo. Everything was focused on the baby, how to swaddle the baby, how to read different baby cues. This high pitch crying means this, low pitch means that. Like at no point did someone go to me like, hey, and by the way, these are the physiological changes you may experience. If at any point you experience X, Y, Z, reach out for help because this is not something that you have to put up with. And this is a common line you'll hear us therapists reiterating is, it's common and not normal and help is available. So often we are told by clinicians that, you know, oh, that's normal, to one case point, oh, you know, everyone seems to think it's normal to be incontinent of urine, particularly if you've had a baby. Well, the answer is no. If you're bothered by it and you don't want to be incontinent for the rest of your life, reach out to your pelvic floor women's health physiotherapist, because with some good assessment, advice and education and just understanding what to put up with and what not to put up with can make a huge difference. You know, knowledge is power, and that's where I think we're doing a real disservice to the people of our communities, that we're not putting enough knowledge out there for women to recognize the common versus the normal. Moving on from education advice, we do manual therapy as well. It's just in places that you wouldn't go as an MSK therapist. You know, we can also use a biofeedback in terms of using EMG or electrical stim for therapy. We use a lot of exercise and movement, and to one waste point, we're using a lot of cognitive functional behavioral therapy. Is that what it's called? That's what the guys out of Curtin, Sullivan and all the rest of it, you know, putting out a lot of research about moving towards that more mindfulness, patient-led, hands-off approach to managing a lot of these persistent kinds of pelvic pain, for example. So fairly similar, you know, but yeah, not too dissimilar either. So yeah.
Yeah, I think what we do is fairly similar. It's just that the problem list is different, I feel. Perhaps MSK, you might get people coming more with like, oh, it's a pain, it's a tightness. Sorry, MSK is a bit far away from me now. But when patients come to us, it's more like, is it a leak? Is it an urgency? Are you just going to the toilet too many times? It could be pain as well. So
or not going enough to the toilet.
Yeah, so it really just depends on what the patient comes complaining about. And then what we typically do is we do a full screen. So the pelvis is only that big. I like to tell my patients, you know, your bladder is good friends with your bowels. And yeah, because they're so close together, when one is unhappy, the other one is, you know, likely might be a contributor of the problem or might be bothered as well. So often we will do bladder, bowel. If you're not a lady, no prolapse screening, but sexual screening as well. So these are the domains that we screen, and then we look at the patient presentation. Was there anything in the history, or is there anything particularly stressful happening around the time where the symptoms started? And then we nut out basically what the contributing factors are. pretty much like what you would do in MSK, and then we treat it. But because the muscles are different, the contributing factors are different. So like hormones play a big part. And of course, if you've recently had a baby or not. So if I took, for example, a postnatal case, we could very well be treating them like an MSK patient. We just take into account a lot of other things. So we might be teaching like breastfeeding positions, which perhaps, you know, a male MSK physio might have some difficulty, unless of course you've had a wife who is breastfed and you are good at it. And then we'll then be talking about hormonal levels, you know, how when you are lactating, prolactin just reduces the amount of estrogen, and then how then that can affect your bladder health and then the pelvic floor muscle strength. And we take that together as a package. So it's really what MSK physios would do, but we just zoomed in to the pelvic floor. So I hope we can demystify what we do. It's not some kind of magical stuff. It's the same thing. I think the basics of it is really the same. You're listening to what the patient is complaining about. You're identifying all the, you know, the local stuff, the regional stuff, and the central stuff that is contributing to whatever the patient's complaining about, and then trying to manage the patient in a holistic manner, just in the pelvis.
Well, you made a good point there about you know, men trying to give advice on breastfeeding, generally probably not going to work, I would imagine. And maybe that's why men don't really understand women's health therapy, because we're so far removed from it, right, in our everyday lives, which makes me wonder. Like, I've never heard of or seen or met a men's women health therapist. Do they exist? Is there any unicorns out there?
I think it is difficult.
The answer is no. I haven't heard of one. There's definitely men's physios who manage men's health, for sure. Yeah. But at no point have I come across, I just don't see how that would fly.
It's difficult. You would have to have a chaperone at all times. So logistically, that's difficult. And you are already prone to complaints. Unlike if you were an obstetrician, I would recommend many good male obstetricians. But yeah, I think for therapists, not so much.
We just spend a lot more time with patients. On average, our initials are, at the clinic I'm at, it's a 1 hour initial and a 45 minute follow-up. And if you're doing pelvic floor work with a male therapist, obviously we don't spend 45 minutes doing manual therapy, but like that's an intense 45 minutes.
So
with someone else.
No, I think no male therapist in women's health. Male therapist in men's health.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I wondered why I'd never heard or seen one of those, which
makes a bit of sense.
Yeah, but now we know. One thing I wanted to ask as well is I've had patients before with like you know, what I assumed was lower back pain or pelvic girdle pain, and then they've ended up with women's health physios and it's worked, but I really feel like they've ended up there too late, and that's sort of on me, that's my fault. And this happened a few times over the years, and I've heard stories of this happening as well, and it's typically from guys as well, other guys, because we have these lower back pain patients, and you know, we're missing something in the early stages where we should, you know, maybe there's some sign or something in the presentation that we're not picking up, where we should be thinking, okay, this is not within my skill set and it needs to go on. Is this something that you've encountered a lot of? What should we as MSK therapists be looking at and thinking, okay, this is maybe we need to be passing on to our women's health colleagues?
Yeah, absolutely. Let me just throw some stats and numbers around for you. So in 2017, a bunch of Canadian researchers basically did a study where they looked at female patients that presented with lumbopelvic pain to see how many of these women are also presented with pelvic floor dysfunction. The number was 95%. So 95% of women that present with lumbopelvic pain or dysfunction will also concurrently present with pelvic floor dysfunction. So that's a large majority of the female patients you may be treating. So you can basically automatically assume there is some underlying changes to the way their pelvic floor is functioning. That may be in the form of urinary incontinence, that may be in the form of pelvic pain, that may be in the form of pain with intercourse. Like, there is quite a variety of symptoms that they may present with. The other thing I want you to consider is, if you don't ask, they're not going to share. And 70% of women will not share their symptoms of pelvic floor dysfunction with you unless they are asked. So it comes down to your skill as a clinician to actually ask those questions. You need to be comfortable probing your patients. 95% of your female patients with lower back pain, asking those hard questions, right? So, you know, it can be as simple as the Continence Foundation of Australia has a screening tool called Pelvic Floor First Screening Tool. And basically it's 7 questions. And the best way to go about starting the conversation or the uncomfortable conversation with your female patient would be is to give context. So throwing some stats around, look, you know, women who often present with lower back pain will also present with changes to their pelvic floor function. Do you mind if I screen you for those? Yes or no? Yes. What would you ask then? Do you accidentally leak urine when exercising, playing sport, or coughing or sneezing? Do you feel like you need to get to the toilet in a rush and maybe not make it in time? Do you feel like you need to constantly go to the toilet? I think I'd also add here, do you feel like you don't go to the toilet often enough? Because understanding what normal is also important. So in a female who roughly drinks 2 liters of water, she might pee between 300 to 500 mils, go to the toilet between 4 to 6 times a day, and maybe at max once at night. This is what we consider normal bladder function. We use that as a baseline to determine movement either side of that. So yeah, to my point, not only asking, do you go too often, but also maybe asking if you're not going enough, particularly in a female that presents early postpartum, because they may be at risk of postpartum urinary retention. Do you find it difficult to empty your bladder or bowel? Do you accidentally lose control of your bowel motions or accidentally pass wind? Do you feel a sense of pressure or heaviness in the vagina? Do you suffer from pain with intercourse, pap smears, or tampon insertion? Or do you have pain anywhere in the region of your pelvis? These are some great screening questions that will help identify your at-risk patients that would flag a referral to a women's health physiotherapist. And we can maybe add a link to that webpage for people watching so they can have that at hand. It's a very widely available tool. But also just to consider as well, to my point that I made earlier, it's not something that happens with age. We've got some studies where they've looked at elite female athletes that are nulliparous, so i.e. never had babies. And basically what the study wanted to look at is the number of women that complain of urinary incontinence during sport. The number was 30%. 1 in 3 girls who have never had children leak urine during competitive sport. And they further break down the kinds of sports that were at greater risk at causing the sports at higher incidence of urinary incontinence. And it was trampolining that was at 70%. So trampolinists predominantly leaked, followed by gymnasts and ballerinas. And then 1 in 3 tennis players, badminton players, and netballers also presented with urinary incontinence. So it goes to show it's not just women who have had babies or women that are old. It's actually competitive female athletes where we've got impact at play as well. The other thing that you need to also consider as a kind of like a global statistic, Wenhui mentioned it earlier, 1 in 3 women will present with urinary incontinence during their lifespan. 1 in 4 will experience symptoms of pelvic organ prolapse, and that's where either your bladder, bowel, uterus, all or a combination sit lower in the pelvic cavity, and in some instances can exist outside the pelvic cavity. One in five women will present with persistent pelvic or sexual pain, and one in nine will complain of fecal incontinence. So it goes to show that these are not normal. These are in fact common, and you know, someone in your network and possibly a family member could be suffering one of these forms of pelvic floor dysfunction, and you're not aware, because it's considered such a taboo topic. Anything going wrong down south is like, oh no, you want to keep that to yourself, you don't want to be sharing that, that's embarrassing. It's just such an unheard of thing to do, to share this knowledge. Slowly it's getting better, like we see social media women being quite vocal about their experiences as, you know, becoming mums, for example. That's often where it starts. Because let's face it, most women also feel like, you know, everyone's had access to everything. What's the point of holding back? I'm not ashamed of anything anymore. And so that conversation and dialogue is happening more often these days. I think, you know, our job as clinicians is to recognize that there is a high concurrent incidence of pelvic floor dysfunction in women, particularly who present with lower back pain. And you should be asking those questions.
I think maybe just to add on, I guess because I work closely with my MSK colleagues, and really see the benefit of having the support of my MSK colleagues in treating people who have low back pain and concurrent like bladder issues, because my appointment slots are 45 minutes and I often find that 45 minutes is quite kind of just enough for me to treat the bladder, bowel, sexual anxiety issues. And of course, I'm not as practiced as my MSK colleagues in terms of manual therapy and stuff like that. So the things to look out for would be, it's kind of like any advice you would give to anyone. So if patients don't seem to be improving, even though you feel like you've kind of addressed all of the contributing factors, then I think that's time to start to consider that probably some of the screening questions that Preet has brought up, you know, might be worthwhile asking. So, for example, a lot of my patients with pelvic organ prolapse will present with back pain, like very big kind of back pain, when the prolapse is at its worst. So then you'd be like, oh, you know, I've done everything right. And then why is it like she's improved, but then there's this plateau. So then, you know, you can go like, many people with low back pain actually do have other issues that could be contributing to that low back pain. You seem to have improved with the treatment that we've done, but then it's just this little bit that is left. So if you don't mind, I'd like to ask these other questions that might actually bring to light some of the other problems that could be contributing, so that I can forward you on to another practitioner just to help you with this other contributing factors. And if the patient's symptoms doesn't seem to make sense, then that's definitely like, sometimes, Preet, correct me if I'm wrong, patients with endometriosis, they can then present with that kind of very vague, like low back pain almost, that doesn't make sense. It's not something that could be aggravated by like loading or postures. And a lot of times younger girls won't bring up the fact that they know it's got something to do with their cycle, but it just doesn't seem very appropriate to share with my very good looking MSK therapist, you know what I mean? So then if you're kind of like, looking through the subjective history and it's not quite like, yeah, making sense, then you can go like, okay, so then we're going to screen you for something else. This, you know, but of course, anyone who has pain, you know, will have all this muscle guarding, then that's when MSK physios definitely can work their magic, and then we can co-manage these patients.
And that's the key, co-manage. We're not here to take your patients away. I mean, we appreciate and value your input as MSK therapist, because that's where your expertise lies. And that's where we work really well together.
And I guess the other group that I find interesting in my clinic that I would like to highlight will be people who seem to have lower lumbar disky issues or have come out from spine surgeries and then kind of tell you like, now I seem to have some kind of other problems, and then I have pain, a bit of weakness, and I'm not very sure if this is relevant, but you know, I can't seem to feel like when I need to pee very well. So those are the people you need to kind of like go like, oh, okay, and then refer them on. So I think generally highlighting it to their surgeons that there might be like a bladder issue, and then to get them to refer on will be good, because quite often My patient has been told to live his life and not think about his bladder so much, but he doesn't have any sensation to move his bowels. So he's going basically on a routine we have come up with. So whenever he wakes up, he drinks a warm cup of coffee, he waits for about 30 minutes, then off he goes to the toilet in a very specific position, and then he does his poo on a daily basis. So he has no sensation, he doesn't feel anything at all. And of course, we deal with things like erectile dysfunction and stuff like that. And his surgeon actually told him to live his life. So I think we need to kind of like play like the patient's advocate. You know, you have to identify these problems and go like, is this something that bothers you? Because after spine surgery, some men will actually lose those spontaneous erections. And spontaneous erections are very important to maintaining the girth and the length and the function of the penis in general. It will contract and shrink if you don't have your spontaneous erection, so that's bad. I think not just for women, but men need to be looked after as well. And I think just the other special group would be people who have the kind of like diagnosis of Parkinson's disease or multiple sclerosis. If they do end up in your clinic with other MSK issues, because they often do, then just to pay a little bit more attention to them as well. Like if they do kind of volunteer, I'm not very sure if you're the right person to tell, but you know, my bowels have been blah, 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 then I think it's good to pick up and then just to let them know that there is something that can be done. Not another kind of exercise, but perhaps a really good routine and then a screen through in terms of their diet, their hydration, how much they're drinking, how much they're not drinking, how often they're drinking. And then that's pretty much where we can play a role in managing them. So then it's like we're helping the same patient, but in very, very different ways. But if musculoskeletal physios could just go like, oh, there is this whole other area, you know, this part of the patient that I haven't actually known that could have problems, then just being able to identify, I think, can be quite satisfying as well, to go like, oh, help the patient in a totally different manner. Yeah.
I mean, just to your point about like giving that diet and fluid intake advice, I think sometimes there's a bit of a gray area with scope of practice. We are not dietitians, we're physios, and with the postgraduate training that we've undertaken, we have been trained by registered dietitians to provide this advice. So just understand the limitations and how much advice you can give with respect to diet and fluid intake as well. Always recommend to seek the advice of a registered dietitian, definitely people with complex bowel needs, IBS, and you know, Crohn's and things like that. There's so many more out there that, yeah, you can Google that, that need more specialised advice.
I mean, it's all very, very interesting. And like you say, it really is a whole other world really out there. But I think it's very important that we sort of receive this wisdom from you, because, you know, the way physio is going is that we're becoming more primary healthcare providers, especially in the private health field, where we're already first contact and people can just walk in off the street. And we do need this knowledge, right? Because we get, you know, I mean, statistically speaking, we're going to get people coming in with these kind of issues, and we need to be aware of it for sure. And I mean, a lot of that you told me, that was the first time I've ever heard it. So, you know, I'm really, really grateful to have heard that. I almost feel like I'm going to lower the tone a little bit now, because I've got like a clickbaity type of question to ask you. And it kind of follows on from what you said, but if there's one thing that, you know, a bog standard MSK or, you know, a hospital physio should know about women's health therapy or pelvic health, what would it be? If there's one sort of key takeaway from everything that we've been talking about, what would it be?
One way.
No pressure.
We are awesome and really nice and approachable people. So if you have any questions, don't be shy, email us, and we're only more than happy to help you out. I think, look, we need to see ourselves as a team. We need to work together. We need to get out of our silos and be comfortable with putting our patients first and optimizing their outcomes. that's the only kind of thought I had with regards to that question. Wenhui, do you have anything more exciting to add?
Wow, one thing. I'm known to talk too much, so summarizing is not one of my strengths. One thing. One thing you should know about women's health physio.
We can also do rectal exams.
Yeah. One thing.
Important takeaway.
Important takeaway. I think the important takeaway for me will be that we really are looking to manage patients together with a musculoskeletal physio. So we're not, so when you refer patients to us, we're not looking at taking over the patient. Like, we like a healthy conversation. So then, you know, you're addressing one problems A, B, C, and then you just notice that there's something going on with the patient that doesn't really quite fit, and then you're wondering if the an assessment would be appropriate. So I think in SGH, a lot of therapists fear referring because they fear that it would be an inappropriate referral. I don't think there is an inappropriate referral. And I think it's great that you could, okay, so in SGH, I think we are more connected in the sense that you can just kind of like text through our internal texting system. But of course, if you're in private, I think what Preet is saying is true, that you shouldn't shy away from contacting any of us, just to kind of go like, do you think this is something that would warrant an appointment? Yeah, I think that is the most important, that there should be this two-way conversation. Don't fear asking because it seems very mysterious, and we're not scary people. Referring doesn't mean to say you are going to lose a patient. We really are looking at co-managing. I think that is that key takeaway. Like, I really would love discussions with other, like MSK physios, regarding whether or not this patient is going to need help. And actually, we have contacts where we can refer a patient to perhaps specialists who might deal with an issue if it's not something that requires therapy immediately but medical treatment, if that makes sense. Yeah, or like we could refer to someone who could fit a pessary and just manage the prolapse before we can then move on to graduating to higher level exercise therapy perhaps. Yeah,
so what I that is, it's, you know, we should you're kind of an extra member of the team, essentially.
Yeah, exactly.
Work with you as much as possible, and you're not an other. You're just part of the same team.
Yeah, we're still physios. We use the same theories. We are kind of like from the same tree, just in a different branch.
Can I just add one other thing as well, though? Say, for example,
no, you're gonna get one thing free. Don't be greedy.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, one thing. Don't overwhelm people. No, go on, please, carry on. Yeah, please do.
I was just going to say, look, you know, say for example, you've got a back pain patient who you've screened, you're like, yeah, look, this patient would warrant a referral. And you bring it up with the patient, like, hey, I think you'd really benefit from seeing a pelvic health, women's health physiotherapist. They're like, why? You know, sometimes if you've identified a coexisting issue, that may not necessarily be bothersome. And they may not have ascribe that same level of priority to that. So at the end of the day, feed that information to them and say, look, I understand that this is what bothers you, but I've also found that this is a concern that should be looked at some point. When you're ready to address that, go see this healthcare provider, because it may not be the right time now. So always be informed by a patient's level of bother. And that's as simple as doing a VAS, 0 out of 10. So, you know, as your the main concern that brings them to your clinic versus what you've identified through the subjective history, and balance it that way. Otherwise, sometimes patients feel like we're just trying to keep them in the system as well by bringing up all these potential problems that they have.
So before we get into our sort of final thoughts, there's one more question I wanted to ask you both, and that is, if there's somebody watching this, some sort of, you know, newbie who's just got into the profession, and they kind of like what they're hearing, how would you go from sort of a junior rotational therapist to becoming a women's health therapist? What's the path that you'd recommend for somebody in Singapore right now? How would they get to where you are right now?
One way you can answer that.
Okay, so if you're in an institute where you actually have someone, where you have a public health clinic or women's health clinic, that would be the most straightforward way. If you're looking at kind of like reading things and watching videos and trying to learning a bit more before you then commit to self-funding for post-grad course or something like that, then I think memberships with places like Continence Foundation Australia, International Continence Society, International Urogyne Association, that's IUGA, these are really good associations to join. They're not expensive. They're probably about 150 Singapore dollars a year. And you have access to a lot of teaching videos from a multidisciplinary team managing public health or women's health. So then you get to listen to like surgeons talk about their different surgical techniques. You get to listen to physios who are kind of leading in their field, teaching you the different things that you need to know about. If you want to look into more physio-specific, Women's Health Training Associates from, where is she from? Taryn Helen? Melbourne?
Sydney?
Oh, okay, sorry. Somewhere in Australia. The East Coast. These are good memberships to have. I don't really remember the Women's Health Training Associates membership would go for how much a year?
So that's actually changed, Wanhui. So Taryn Hallam no longer offers the one-week introduction to women's health because that's now come under the umbrella of the Australian Physiotherapy Association. So people who have already completed the women's health one-week intro with Taryn Hallam can have access to her advanced courses that are offered in person or online. Okay. If you want to go through that base training, actually try and become an APA member and sign up to their Continence and Women's Health Special Interest Group. Okay. I think there's some sort of reciprocal arrangement between SPA and APA, I think.
There is, yeah.
So I think, in all honesty, that's the advice I'm giving the people that reach out to me. I'm saying, look, take charge of your own CPD, get out there, demonstrate an interest by enrolling in some CPD online. Another benefit of COVID, a lot of information has come online. You can watch and learn from the comfort of your own home. I get it. You're not going to get that opportunity to get that hands-on stuff, but all learning starts with sitting in a classroom or in front of a screen. You get that theory under your belt before you're graduated to allow to come in contact with other humans to practice that part.
So once you have that kind of like online theoretical understanding, if you were looking for some hands-on practical, KKH actually, they have been offering this attachment-based, like I think a minimum of 4 weeks attachment, so you can contact them. Exciting news is in future SGH will be offering this as well. So you just need to email the SGH Physiotherapy Department and then we can work something out. So I guess what we are really trying to do is we understand that there is a lack of training opportunities in Singapore. Not everyone has the luxury of traveling overseas. The hands-on practical component really is very important. I hope that with SGH kind of coming on board to provide this opportunity for a clinical attachment, that would allow more physios to explore their interests in this area. And then basically what we want to do is to increase the patient's access to quality pelvic health management. So yeah, I think exciting. There's lots of room to grow in this area. There is a demand. The demand is growing. So I used to only work closely with the ONG department, but now urology and colorectal have come on board because they recognize that patients do need the help that we can provide. So yes, please join us.
Yeah, absolutely. Try and find a mentor, do some observation if you can. I was just also going to add there, if you have access or are from the UK, there's the POGP, pelvic something, obs and gynies, physio something, POGP, just Google that. In the US, there's Herman and Wallace as well. They do online and in-person training. So these are more private things. If you want to have a more formalized university-based training, Curtin Uni, I think they've put on hold the post-grad cert, but they're still potentially offering the masters. I need to be corrected on that. And definitely Melbourne University are offering post-grad and masters. And then the other thing I was just going to suggest is like try and become members of these online Facebook groups where all us men's health physios hang out. So that, I think there's one called Pelvic Huddle and Global Pelvic Health. So definitely like join the conversation there. Even if you're just reading the questions and answers, there's a wealth of knowledge that gets shared on those platforms. And if you are really, really interested in learning more about women's health, I'm hiring, so reach out to me. Shameless plug.
Gotta plug while you can, right? Yeah. Okay, so we're actually jumping up on the hour mark there, so I'm gonna transition into our final thoughts. I would just like to say, first of all, thank you both very much for actually, you know, spending an hour on Saturday afternoon to reach out and talk to the community, because this is an area where the vast majority of physios really don't know anything about it. I really do. And I've learned so much just listening to you both for an hour. So, you know, thank you. And I hope that people watching this will also learn a lot as well. This is going to be published on YouTube, Spotify, and a few other social media channels. So if people have got questions, you know, please throw them in the comments below. And hopefully we can try and strong arm Preet and Wanhui to answer those. We may forward them to them. And if you get time, we'll try to answer if you've got specific questions. Also, you know, please do join SPA and, you know, we can try and get more of these questions answered, more of these issues raised, and we can produce more content like this. Do you guys have a specific final thought you want to share with the guys?
It's common, not normal, and helps available.
I think that's a great motto, right? That's really, I think we'll try and sort of Photoshop that into the top, or we'll use it as the thumbnail.
I think that's a great idea. The more we recognize what we need to live with and what we can address and perhaps resolve in most instances is definitely a win for all.
Wanhui, any final thoughts?
No, I'd just like to echo that. It's common, not normal. You don't have to live with it. Yeah. Don't let anyone tell you that leaking is normal, please.
Send them to Wanhui. She'll put them right.
Yeah, okay. That's right.
She's got research to back that.
Oh, and also we will link Wanhui's research in the text in the show notes below as well. So please go ahead and read it. I'm sure it's very interesting. I'm yet to read it, but I'm gonna read it straight afterwards, actually. Okay, with that, we're gonna sign off. Thank you everyone for tuning in. Thank you both for taking time to educate us all. And goodbye, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Physio Chats, a podcast series brought to you by the Singapore Physiotherapy Association. Follow us on Spotify and our YouTube channel for future content. We'll see you then.